We're continuing our series we called Mind Wars. And I wonder if you've ever had the experience where things were going pretty well in your life, but if you weren't careful, you could still find something to complain about. Anybody? Confession's good for the heart. Anybody? You could still kind of find something, you know, to complain about. And in the times of unrest and the times of stress and the times of, we live in very unsettled times. The question is, what do we do with our minds? What do we do with our thoughts at a time like this? Well, let me just kind of remind you of where we've gone through this series, some of the truths that we've learned. We'll look at the scripture that we've been looking at since the beginning. The mind is a battlefield, and most of life's battles are won or lost in the mind. What goes in your mind comes out of your life. And if you, it's impossible for you to have a negative mind but live a positive life. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3 through 5, we looked at, and let's just read it again today. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. That's good news. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Jesus. I want to highlight that phrase, take captive. We take captive every thought. And so this morning, what we're going to talk about is, how do you win the war in your mind when you're hurting? How do you win the war in your mind when you're facing pain and disappointment or tragedy or suffering? You know, if you've been through a tough time in your life, or maybe you're in one now, you know that everything in your mind gets exaggerated, right? It's like a pain or suffering or struggle is like a magnifier to all the negative things in your mind. And the battle really heats up in your mind during a difficult time. And so we want to talk about, how do you take captive those thoughts and bring them into obedience to Christ when you're hurting? What do you do with your thought life when you're hurting? Well, remember what we've said in the series so far is, every time you think a thought, you create a neuropathway. And the more you think that thought, that little neuropathway turns into a highway and then an interstate and then a default setting. And you'll tend to take that path. The more you take that path, the more you'll tend to take that path. The more you think that thought, the more you'll tend to think that thought. The more you concentrate and meditate and stew and stir and process the same kind of thinking, the more likely you are to continue to take that kind of thinking. So, for example, if you think, man, my life stinks, guess what you're more likely to think? Man, my life stinks. And the more you think it, the more likely you are to think it. And so watch this. Even when something really good happens, you know what you're going to tend to say? Man, my life stinks. Somebody's like, did you not see the good thing that just happened? Well, I mean, I did. But my life stinks. You don't get it. And so that's called a neuropathway enlargement. So, one of the scientific words for this is cognitive bias, or we might think about it like a mental filter. And what this means is it's a certain way of seeing the world. So basically, either maybe the family you grew up in, or some painful experiences, or maybe just the way that you allow yourself to think over and over and over and over has given you a cognitive bias or a mental filter. So in other words, if something bad happened to you, your filter tends to see something, has been shaped in a way that you see that bad thing happening again. Whether it's actually happening again or not, you still see it. That's a cognitive bias. So let's just give some examples so it might be clear. If you grew up around abusive men and you were hurt or harmed somehow at the hand of some abusive men, guess what you'll tend to think? That's shaped your filter. And if you're not careful, what you'll tend to see in the future is your filter will tell you that men are untrustworthy, and you'll feel at risk when you're around someone. Whether that's accurate or not might not be true, but that's how you'll see it. Or let's say, for example, you grew up in a family and your family was always bad-mouthing wealthy people. You know, all rich people are greedy and they're evil and they're selfish and they're bad, and that shaped your mental filter. But yet as you grew up in life and you began to succeed, you became financially more successful, but it created this internal conflict in you because you were taught that wealthy people are evil and they're all greedy and they're all selfish. And so then it shapes the way that you filter your own life, and you begin to think something must be wrong with me. Whether it is or not, that's the filter that you've been given. That's why you can have two people have the exact same experience and come out with a completely different view of what happened. It's not the facts, it's the filter. So, for example, wherever you work, you can have a supervisor where you work. They go in and have the exact same conversation with two different people on the exact same day. And one person reacts like this. They say, I can't believe you would say this to me. I can't believe you're talking to me like this. Do you know how much I've done for this company? They're offended. Do you know how much I've sacrificed? Do you know what I've gone through? Do you know what's happened to me? I can't believe you say, I hate working here. I don't want to work anymore. I can't believe you would even say this to me. That's one reaction. Another, same conversation, same statement, same day, different person. And here's how the second person might react. The second person might be saying, I can't believe that you cared enough about me to take the risk to have this conversation with me. Now I know how much you value me, because you are willing to have a harder conversation with me. And you know what? You've given me some ways that I can grow and I can improve, and I want you to know how much I appreciate it. It's not the facts. It's the filter. That's why you can have two people walk into the same church in the same church service, and one stands and says, my goodness, did you see the way that person looked at me? All Christians are hypocrites. I can't believe that this place is like this. I hate the music. I hate how it feels. I hate what happened, and I never want to come back. And you can have another person walk in and say, can you believe how loving these people are? Did you see the way they looked at me? It was great. Man, I like the music. You know what? I think maybe I'm here because somehow God brought me here. Same facts, different filter. So let me give you a little one that's maybe a little more controversial. After the pandemic, depending on what your news outlet was, I feel the ground shaking underneath me. The vaccine was rolled out. And depending on who you listen to or your filter, you might have thought that, hey, this vaccine is the greatest invention in world history. It'll cure world hunger. If we'll just get the shot in the arm, we'll experience world peace and everything. Not only will it eradicate this disease, it'll eradicate all diseases for all time. And if we could get a mask on everybody, that would even be better. On the other hand, if you had a different framework, a different filter, you might have thought, this is the worst thing ever invented by humanity. It's going to kill us all. And by the way, the government put a chip in it so they can track us till we die. Same facts, different filter. In Numbers chapter 13 and 14, we see this exact thing happen. Moses sent out 12 spies to spy the promised land that God had given to the people of God. And 12 spies went into the land, and two came back, and this is what they said. They said, it is beautiful. It's stunning. It's bountiful. The resources are overflowing, and I can't believe God has given us this land. But 10, doesn't it tell us anything? That two of them saw that and 10 of them saw something totally. Does that tell us anything about the majority of the way that the human filter tends to default? The majority said, this is terrible. The land is going to eat us. We're never going to survive this. This is a suicide mission. It's crazy. And by the way, there's giants there. Watch. And the filter that they saw it through, God is actually sending us out here to kill us. And the filter they saw it through said, they're giants. And you know what? The filter didn't just change the way they saw the land. The filter changed the way they saw themselves. And they said, we're just little bugs. We're just little grasshoppers. They're going to squish us. 10 saw it one way. 2 saw it the other way. It wasn't the facts. It was the filter. Filter matters. But also the way that you frame a situation matters too. The way that you frame how you look at something. And I want to show you how the Apostle Paul framed the circumstances in his life to get a different perspective. Now, the modern phrase for this would be reframing. Reframing is looking at something in a different way by changing the meaning. We would think about it like this in the faith and in the church. We're trying to gain God's perspective on something. Where we will lose the war in the mind is when we look at it from our perspective rather than trying to see it from God's perspective. So one of the great questions you can ask yourself when you're in a time of pain or disappointment or hurt is you can say, I wonder how God sees all this. I wonder how this looks from eternity's perspective. I wonder when I get to heaven how I might look back on this chapter or moment or event of my life and see it different than the way I see it now. See, that's reframing. So the Apostle Paul was trying to find God's perspective in his life, but let's just use an example of how this might work in your day. Let's say that you can reframe a day. Let's say you wake up one morning, it's a long day, it's going to be a hard day, you have a lot of work to do, And you know it, and so you're going into this with dread. And you're thinking, my goodness, there's so much to do today. I'm overwhelmed. I'm never going to get all this done. I don't know how I'm going to get all this stuff done. And I'm going to rush and hurry to work and try to get there early to get a jump on it. And these crazy people that I work with, they're driving me insane. My spouse is driving me crazy. My old clunker car is probably going to break down again like it did last week. It's driving me crazy. And I don't know how we got all these kids. These kids are driving me insane. Right? I don't know how all this is going to happen. This is going to be a terrible day. Guess what I bet you're going to have? A terrible day. But if you wake up in the morning, now watch, I'm not talking about denial, and I'm not talking about avoidance, and I'm not talking about living in a fairy tale land. I'm talking about reframing. What if you woke up in the morning and said, man, I really have a lot to do today, but I am so thankful that I don't have to do it by myself. God is with me. And what happens today is not all up to me because he's going to intervene in ways I can't even see yet. And thank God for my junky old car that gets me to work. Right? And you know what? Those people at work that are driving me crazy, you know what? I bet you if I knew them a little bit better, I would understand that there's some kind of pain or hurt in their life that made them the way that they are. And who knows, maybe God put me there to minister to one of them. Maybe that's why I'm there in the first place. You know what? By God's grace, today's going to be a good day. Because I don't know what all's going to happen. But God, I pray today you would help me find your purpose in today. Man, how many of you think that would change the day? See, that's what reframing is. So let's slow down for a minute and just think about your own life. I wonder how many of you watching or here today in person, your life hasn't turned out like you expected yet. You had, you know, these dreams or ambitions or ideas. You thought by this point in life you'd be further along. You thought you would be doing something different. You thought you'd be in a relationship, or you thought that you'd be married by now, or you thought that maybe, you know, you went to college and you spent all that money and all that time getting a degree, and now you're in a field that's not even related to the degree that you've got, but you still got the debt from the degree, and you're wondering, was it even worth it? You know, maybe you kind of did everything right, and you married your, you know, high school or college sweetheart, and things went bad, and now you're divorced today, and you're heartbroken, and you're thinking, man, this is not where I thought that I would be. Maybe you thought you would be married, or you'd be out of debt, or you'd be running your own business, or your kids' lives would be going differently than they are now. And maybe some days you wake up and you just, if you're honest, you just ask yourself the question, why is it that I'm not where I want to be yet? Well, Paul the Apostle knows exactly how you feel. Because he had a heart for God. He had a heart to please God. He didn't do anything but give his life to the advancement of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And he felt called to go to Rome. And the reason he felt called to go to Rome is because Rome was like the capital of the world. And so he knew at that time, if he could get the gospel spreading in Rome, it could spread throughout the entire world. So he had this great dream of going to Rome and preaching the gospel. Here's the thing, though. Instead, he did make it to Rome, but instead it wasn't as a preacher, it was a prisoner. And he was on house arrest. And he was awaiting the outcome of his trial, which may, he didn't know at the time, may lead to his execution. And some say it may have. And so he had this vision, he had this dream, I'm going to go to Rome and I'm going to preach the gospel. People are going to get saved and churches are going to get planted and the gospel is going to spread all over the world from there. That's what God's put in my heart to do. But instead, he is a prisoner on house arrest, chained to a soldier. And I want to read to you today from the, this is the probably a version of the Bible you've never heard of called the LSV. It's the Life Stinks version. Okay? And here's what Paul said in the Life Stinks version. Now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me really stinks. As a result of all the hell I've been through, I'm quitting my life group and I'm never going back to church. Now, just for the record, and I know this will live on the internet forever, it's not a real translation. Okay? I want everybody to know. That's not in the Bible. But that's what Paul could have said. But watch this. Watch. He reframed it. Let's read what Paul the Apostle actually said. Now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. He's saying, I know this looks really bad, but God is using it, and he's using it to fulfill the call he gave me. It just doesn't look how I thought it was going to look. He reframed it from God's point of view. You know what Paul had? He had a Roman soldier chained to him for 8 hours a day. And then after 8 hours, that soldier would go off shift, and a new soldier would come on shift, and he would have another one chained to him. And then after 8 hours, they'd do it again, and they'd do it again, and they'd do it again, and they'd do it again. And you know what Paul said? Every time you chain a new soldier to me, I'm going to share the gospel with them, and I'm going to share the goodness of God. And that's what he did. Nothing like being chained to a preacher. Can you imagine? And he was chained, had a captive audience for 8 hours a day. And so much so, it says, the whole palace guard. They know I'm not here because I'm a murderer or an adulterer or I didn't steal from anybody. I'm here because of Jesus, and they all know it. And it's spreading. See, he reframed it. Did it hurt? Yes, it hurt. Was it disappointing? Yes, it was disappointing. Did it frustrate him? Yes, it frustrated him. But he reframed it to try to see it from God's point of view. And now look at verse 14. And because of my imprisonment, most of the believers here have gained confidence and boldly speak God's message without fear. Do you see what's happening? Had he not been in prison, everybody else would have been like, oh, go, Paul. You're doing good. Paul's awesome. Keep preaching, Paul. I'm not sharing anything. You do all of it. But because he was in chains, and because of his struggle, and because of the limitation, and because he kept preaching anyway, and because he saw it from God's point of view, it actually weaponized most of the other believers to go, if he can do that from prison, what am I doing? If he can risk that, I can risk whatever I have to lose out here, and I can speak. And it brought boldness to the church. It brought boldness and confidence. He says, look, it might look bad, but it's doing good. Something good is coming from this. God's plan's going forward. It's not the facts. It's the frame. How are you going to see the things that are happening in your life? Paul had an amazing spirit. He had an amazing spirit. How do we do that? How do we reframe the hurts and the wounds and the disappointments of our life so that we see from God's perspective? How do we do that? Well, we've all got stuff, right? You got stuff in your marriage. You got stuff with one of your kids, with all of your kids. You got stuff at work. You got stuff at home. It's an election year. Oh, my goodness, help me somehow. Christmas is coming. You got stuff with finances. You got stuff with the doctor. You got stuff in your brain. You got stuff in your body. You got stuff going on in life. Stuff, 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 stuff. How are you going to reframe that stuff so that you see what God is actually doing? Let me give you three tools that will help you reframe. Number one, thank God for what didn't happen. We always focus on the bad thing that did happen. You know how many bad things didn't happen? There was a 20-year-old girl that came home to see her parents and say, Mom, Dad, I got bad news. I need you to sit down. I'm embarrassed to tell you that one night in a crazy thing, I went out and went to a bar and I got drunk and I met this guy and he came back to my apartment and I got pregnant and he's on probation and when he gets out of rehab, he's going to try to get a job and but he doesn't have anywhere to live and so we're going to get married after that and he's out in the car with his stuff and he's going to move in and come live with us tonight. Now that's a lot to take in 2 minutes. She just let it sit there for a minute. And then she said, hey, I need you to know none of that happened. I got a D in chemistry. I just wanted you to know it could have been worse. Right? It could have been so much worse. How many of you need to thank God for some things that didn't happen? Right? So maybe for you, you didn't reach the goals at work you were supposed to reach, so you're not going to get the bonus that you needed, but you still got a job. Maybe you're in a car wreck and your insurance is going to go up and your car got totaled, you got to go find another car, and maybe you didn't get hurt. I mean, a few years from now, you probably won't even hardly remember it, but you would remember if you got crippled. And so we can thank God for the things that didn't happen. I lost my mom a few years ago, and not only did I lose her, but about 2 years before she passed away, COVID created this gap. She was in poor health, and so I was afraid to go see her because I thought if I go see her and I unknowingly transmit COVID to her and that takes her life, I don't know how I would live with that. And so it created a separation between us, not in love, but like that. And then because my life was so crazy, during that time, I didn't have very much time to talk to her. And I wish, like anything, I could talk to her today. I regret not having that time. It was a loss. But can I tell you what? I had a great mom. I had a great mom. And so I can be sad over what I lost, and I am sad about it. But you know what didn't happen? I didn't have a bad mom. I could have had a bad mom. I had a great mom. And so then I reframe it and say, let me thank God for what didn't happen. I grew up in a spiritual desert in my home. Like, my home was not a good place spiritually. Even though my mom did her best, the whole environment wasn't great spiritually. But my kids grew up in a place where we talked about God and we had discussions, open discussions about God, and I see the difference in their life. And although I didn't have that, you know what I am thankful for is that my kids are believers and they grew up in a totally different way than I did. My son was headed to Atlanta a few years ago on I-20 and topped a hill, and there was all the traffic was stopped. He ran straight into the back of a truck, totaled the car. instantly. But he walked out without a scratch. So I thank God. I thank God for what didn't happen. A couple of years ago, we were out in California in an Airbnb, and a bear broke in the window and ransacked the kitchen and the living room. I mean, tore it up, and we slept through it. Four of us in four different rooms, we slept through it. And I'm so thankful for what didn't happen. You know what I mean? Both of my boys are type 1 diabetics. One has been for 17 years, and one has been for 13 years. And had they been born 100 years ago because of a way to treat it, they would both be dead now. They wouldn't have lived this long. Had they been born in some other countries in the world today, they wouldn't be alive now. The average life expectancy of a type 1 diabetic in Rwanda is 4 years. And they've carried this 17 years and 13 years. Sometimes we need to thank God for what didn't happen. Right? Yeah. All right, number two, practice reframing. So preframing just means that you're going to decide how you're going to look at something before it happens. So you're on your way into a meeting and you say, oh, I don't want to go to this meeting. This is boring and it's terrible and I hate these people and nothing good's going to get happen and it's just such a waste of my time. How many of you think you're going to have a good meeting? It's going to be a terrible meeting, I promise. But if you say, you know what, I can't control everything that happens in this meeting, but I'm going to do my best and I'm going to make the best out of it. I'm going to be as productive as I can and I'm going to be as present with the people in the room as I can be. You've pre-framed how you're going to enter into that meeting. When my wife was sick and both my boys had diabetes, I had to go down to the, they played football, and so that's a high risk, exercise is a high risk activity for a type 1 diabetic. I was the only human available that could care for them during that activity, and I had to be present all the time. Because if they were to drop or, you know, whatever, they have to go to the emergency room, it'd be terrible. So I had to lock in and stay. So I'm sitting there, you know, at football in August and September in the hot South, 3 hours a day, 3 to 6 o'clock every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday was the game, so it was more hours. And I would go every day. And there for a while, I haven't always pre-framed things right. And there for a while, I wasn't pre-framing it right. I was thinking, here we go again. I don't want to be here. It's hot. I got so much to do. My wife is at home sick. I'm going to have to cook dinner when we get done. I got to get the dishes. Then I got to stay up till 2 o'clock and check their sugar to make sure they don't drop. And I'm trying to run a church on the side. You know, there's a lot of things going on. And there's so many things at the church where people need my input and attention, and I don't have time to do it. And so I'm sitting there, and I tried to work a little bit, but it was so hot that the sweat on my arms. you'll find it. But watch this. If you look for God, you'll find him. If you're looking for the honorable, the true, the beautiful, the pure, the worthy, you will find it. So what do you do if you have a real tragedy in your life? I'm not talking about like you're having a bad day, you're having a bad week, it's a bad stretch. I'm talking about what do you do? How do you win the war in your mind if you're having a real tragedy in your life? Now look, some people believe that every tragedy has a purpose. And I used to believe that. I used to believe that every tragedy had a purpose. So every time something really bad, really unexplainable would happen, I would try to find, what is God's purpose for this bad thing? I no longer believe that. I think if you hurt deeply enough and you hurt long enough, you probably won't believe it either. I don't believe that God has a purpose for every bad thing. I think there are some tragedies in life that are pointless and purposeless, and they have no rhyme or reason, and they just hurt. They're just a loss, and they hurt, and they're bad. And there is no divine reason. There is no thing that you're like, oh, well, you know, God caused this to happen because of this or this or this. But now watch. I also have come to believe that God is so good that he can take something that's pointless and purposeless and useless and make something good come from it. That's how good he is. He can take something with no rhyme or reason that's completely unexplainable. I can tell you, when you talk to enough people that hurt, the number one question we all arrive at is this: why? And what do you do with the pains in life that there is no answer to the question why? I don't know. I don't know why. Just hurts. This week marks the 1-year anniversary of me losing my wife. And so I've had some time to reflect, think about her life. And I watched her suffer with a disease for 10 years. And I would look sometimes and I would say, okay, well, maybe this is how God's, you know, going to do this or do that or do the other. She just suffered. She just suffered. And she suffered to death. And it was the greatest pain I've ever known in my life. And it just hurt. Just hurt. And I could never see, I could never ask the question why. I never found the answer, and no one's ever given it to me that sounded right to me. And so as I look back over her life and this pointless suffering, it's how it felt a lot of the time. I want to show you what I mean by what I said a minute ago. God is so good, he can take something as pointless and as purposeless as her suffering, and he can bring something good from it. So what did he bring from it that was good? I can't tell you the amount of things in my life, the good things that God has brought in my life because of that pain. God has increased my empathy for other people. Sometimes when people tell me how they hurt, I just can't help but cry. Somehow I can feel other people's pain sometimes more than I could. It's brought growth in my life that I didn't have before. I don't think that you can get without deep suffering. It's brought grace. I have gone to places in God's grace that I didn't know existed. And God's better than I thought he was. But it took an encounter with his grace. It took an encounter with his true genuine mercy for me to know that. I look in my kids' life and I see how they're both serving God today and the people that they've become, and they're rooted and grounded and not easily shaken. And I look at the strength that's brought in their life, and the other thing is it does is it gives you good values. You're not distracted by the noise and the glitter in life. You know what suffering does? It makes life real clear. It makes what's important really, really clear. And it gives you a sense of wholeheartedness and clarity that I don't know that there's anything else that could bring it. Now here's the hard question. So do I think that God caused her suffering so that we could experience the good things that we have? No. Because I can tell you, if I could undo it, I'd undo it right now, and I'd take her back right now. I wouldn't make that trade. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying to you is God is so good that he can take something that he didn't cause and he didn't send, because God's not the author of death, and he could take something that's so purposeless and he could make something beautiful and rich and true and good. That's how good God is. So when you're really hurt and your brain's attacked with this war and you're trying to win, how do you win? You realize that every pain in life, either God has a purpose for it and he brought it, and then there's these other pains that God doesn't bring and he doesn't produce, but he will bring something good from it, because that's how good he is. So what we need to do is we need to frame life's events in such a way that we see the good things that God's doing through them, that we see the goodness of God inside of them. So we've got to stop passively accepting the frames of this world that say God doesn't care about you and he doesn't love you and you're by yourself and you're on your own and you're rejected and you'll never measure up and you're always going to fail and you're always going to be behind. We've got to reject those frames, and we got to accept the frame and say, no, it's not different facts. It's a different filter. I'm going to see the goodness of God because it's what I choose to look at. And that's going to renew my mind. Here's the thing. Here's the wrong frame. Let's interpret God's goodness through life circumstances. That's what most of us do. That's probably where all of us start. Well, if God were good, I wouldn't have this or that or the other. And so we define and we weigh and we judge God's goodness based on our circumstances. What we need to be doing is we need to be interpreting our circumstances through the goodness of God. And we need to be saying, I know God's good. I'm not going to doubt that. I just don't know what he's going to do with all this yet. Paul's chained to a prisoner. He's a soldier, and he's going, I'm going to preach the gospel to him. God called me to Rome to preach the gospel. I'm going to preach the gospel to him. And they're going to bring me another one, and I'm going to do it to him. They're going to bring me another one, I'm going to do it again. And you know what? Man, the church spread throughout the whole world at that time. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of the world, but be transformed within by the renewing of your mind. Then you will know the good and pleasing will of God your Father. But the war's got to be won here. Would you stand with me this morning? Would you just settle your heart for a minute? The worship team's coming. They're going to lead us. And I know that there are some heavy circumstances in the room. I know there's some battles going on in the mind. Lord, today we open our mind to you. We open our heart to you. And God, we ask you today to help us to see your goodness. Would you just settle your heart for a moment in his presence? And just give him the space for the next few minutes to just move in your heart and your mind. our worship team leads us. Let's follow.